Hello, this is Lewis. Quick editor's note, this episode was recorded several weeks ago before the last episode we released was recorded. So in this episode, we refer to the Halloween special as next week's episode, but that it was in fact last week's episode. Thank you and enjoy.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Hierarchy. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Now Showing podcast. I'm your host, as always, Sam Houston. I'm joined once again by my wonderful co-host, Lewis. We're back today to talk about a trio of varied features, including Smile, which is the debut horror flick from director Parker Finn, which follows a recurring incident where someone watches another person kill themselves with a big smile on their face and then goes on to do the same thing themselves in the future. This film follows Sosie Bacon's character, Rose Cotter, who has to try and avoid the same fate. I will be reviewing that because, of course, any person that's listened to more than one episode of the podcast will know that Lewis is terrified of all horror films. Now, both me and Lewis will be looking at Gina Prince Bythewood's historical action, drama, biopic, epic, I don't know how to describe it, The Woman King, which is led by Viola Davis and also features performances from young star Thuso Mbedu, Lashawn Lynch, John Boyega, and more. And we'll also be looking at Black Adam, which you will be reviewing. I haven't seen it yet, which is the ego-driven flick that The Rock has been promoting for about 3 years at this point, which is a kind of anti-hero, bad version of Shazam, obviously played by The Rock himself, and it also follows his linking up with the Justice Society of America, which includes Piers Brosnan's Dr. Fate. Is that correct?
Yes.
That's correct, right? Yeah, that's what I've gathered from the trailer. I haven't seen it yet, but I'll try to see it before the next episode, so I'll give my own thoughts as well. But yeah, how are you doing? It's been a while again.
I'm doing well, yeah. It has been a while again. Not quite as long as it was last time, but it's still been a while. I'm doing quite well. And it's good to be back.
Lewis, we released 2 episodes in the same month.
We have. That has not happened in a few months. That's exciting.
It's impressive, really. This is progress. I might be right in saying that over the, at least in the recording, I think in the release of the last 3 episodes of the podcast, we've had 3 different prime ministers.
That is true. That is certainly true.
That's a mad statistic, really.
It is. We had Boris Johnson for the episode before last, Liz Truss for the last one, and now we've got Rishi Sunak. That is a bizarre statistic.
If you went before that, you know, think of the 3 prime ministers before these 3 episodes, you'd be going back to Blair.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of progress. And I can't say that I haven't become a changed man as a result of this.
We've had a new monarch, two new prime ministers. It's wild times 100%. In the UK right now.
Absolutely. Everything's really expensive as well. Everyone keeps moaning about it. Who noticed?
Yeah.
Thank God cinemas are so affordable.
Yes, thank God.
Thank God. I actually did have an affordable cinema experience that I would like to talk about, but it is very horror themed, so I might be leaving it for the next episode, which may or may not be a Halloween special depending on time. So I do want to boast about my all-night horror marathon, but I'm going to leave that for next episode. But yeah, I'll be doing pretty well otherwise. Let's use that to segue straight into our What We Watch section, Lewis. So it's been a while, but I haven't watched that much because, as always, I am a very busy boy. Yeah. But I'll tell you about a few things I've been watching. I have watched... Well, I watched a few new films because, as I said a second ago, I went to this all-night horror marathon at the Prince Charles Cinema. I'm going to review them all next week as part of the horror episode, the Halloween episode, if we do that. If we don't, it'll just be next episode. And that 5 films was The Exorcist, The Thing, The Shining, the 1977 version of Suspiria, and the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, the original one, of which I'd only seen The Shining and The Exorcist previously. But I'm not going to talk about those, except for when I just talked about those the last 2 minutes. I am going to talk about a horror film because, of course, it is October, and even though this isn't a horror episode, we're still talking about Smile and stuff, so it's still some horror-y, and it's, you know, these Halloween-y times. I watched one of the classic horror films of all time, which I hadn't seen before, and that is the 1931 James Whale film Frankenstein, starring Boris Karloff. You've seen it, I believe. Is that correct?
That is correct, yeah.
I was genuinely very shocked at just how watchable it was, because of course I understand the you know, importance of it, and I know that I was always going to appreciate the craft of it, but I was actually very surprised at how much it kind of stands up. Obviously, you know, the monster is not as intimidating as it would have been in, you know, pre-World War times, whatever. But the kind of pacing, the fact that it's only 71 minutes long or something, not, you know, 80 minutes or whatever, it's, you never get bored. It's constantly moving forward. And I thought it was just a very entertaining watch. Obviously, Karloff is excellent in the role of the monster, but also Colin Clive, who plays Henry Frankenstein. And it's one thing for people that have watched the film, it's amazing how this, in this very serious and at the time very scary horror film, they throw in the character of Baron Frankenstein, which is the father of Henry Frankenstein, who is a complete comedy character in this very serious horror world. He's just a complete ridiculous comedy character, and I appreciate that a lot. Other than that, I've rewatched a couple documentaries that I love, two of my favourite documentaries, one of which is a very well-known Netflix produced film, Dick Johnson is Dead, which I'm sure you saw at the time as well.
Yeah,
wonderful film, excellent kind of, you know, way of looking at morality, and you know, the reality that everyone has to see their parents grow old and dementia and all these things. You know, it's a wonderful, very heartwarming, very, you know, soul crushing look at life and everything, you know, everything within it. Also, another documentary on Netflix, perhaps slightly lesser known, Behind the Curve. Have you seen Behind the Curve? Are you aware of Behind the Curve?
I am aware of it, but I haven't seen it.
Yeah, it's the 2018 Flat Earth documentary they made. And I think I've actually might have talked about it on the podcast before, maybe when I first watched it. I'm not certain about that. But I would say I think it is excellent. And you really feel sorry for the Flat Earthers. You know, you kind of get to know their point of view, and I'm not, like, sympathising with the concept itself, but you realise very quickly into the documentary, well, as you watch it, you realise that the Flat Earth conspiracy theory is not at all about the shape of the Earth. It's all about the fact that these people have been, you know, I just feel so out of touch with modern world, or feel that everyone seems to feel so tired of feeling like they know less than everyone else, and it's just that this is the one way they can kind of try and exert the power of, like, I actually know better than you. And whilst their thoughts are ridiculous, you know, almost understand that it's just them wanting to feel a bit better than them because they're so tired of being told they're idiots. And I you know, whilst I don't agree with their points, I can understand where they come from. So it's actually quite sad, you know, when you watch like that. But yeah, aside from that, I've been watching a lot of television. Just the old, you know, typical stuff. Me and you have been watching Doctor Who together. We're planning to do a Doctor Who episode that's going to be releasing in the next couple of weeks. We've been talking about that for a long time, but we actually think it might actually happen this time. We've been watching a bit of rewatching Futurama, as always. But I tell you something, I talked on the podcast before about I talked about when I fell in love with Kitchen Nightmares, the Gordon Ramsay show, the you know, everyone's seen it, yeah?
Yeah.
I have fallen in love with Bar Rescue. I have fallen head over heels for Bar Rescue, which is very much the same thing. Are you aware of Bar Rescue? Have you seen Bar Rescue?
I'm not, but I can kind of figure out what it is based on the name.
Yeah. It's basically Kitchen Nightmares, except for pubs. It's set in America. Big man John Taffer, he comes in, he sorts out, you know, this pub's lost $200,000 in the last year, and he comes in and he goes, your glasses are wrong, you've got the wrong atmosphere, you know the name's shit, you know, you look like a strip club, change your lighting, do this, do that. He gets some experts in, and mate, it's beautiful, mate. And I of course, being a bartender myself, you know, it's like busman's holiday, really. You know what I mean, it's work when I'm at home. It's kind of unnecessary homework, but I love it. Shout out John Taffer. Yeah, that's been mainly what I've been watching. What about yourself, Lewis?
I have been predictably much busier in the film department. I've seen quite a few interesting moving pictures over the past month. I've seen the Julia Roberts and George Clooney rom-com, Ticket to Paradise, which caused a lot of conversation because it was a star-driven rom-com, one of the first in ages. And it's done very well at the box office, which is great. And it is great. It's one of those great classic rom-coms. We need more good rom-coms that are driven by their stars. We need less
George Clooney, though.
What do you have against George Clooney?
I find him quite insufferable, to be honest.
Fair enough. I mean, he is quite insufferable in Ticket to Paradise, but that's kind of his character. Right. But it works very well.
He is the most of any actor. He is the most only plays himself of any actor I've ever seen. Like, he just plays George Clooney, and that really annoys me. Like, even more so than The Rock.
I don't know about that, but maybe we'll get to that when we talk about Black Adam. But I enjoyed Ticket to Paradise. It's great. We need more rom-coms like this. It's great. And for the first time in ages, I was in the cinema, they played bloopers during the credits. Bring that back.
Really?
We should start doing that again. Bloopers during the credits.
I agree.
It was brilliant. They should do it. I think
they should do it, especially like during sad, emotional films, so that it just like it kind of lets off some steam at the end.
Bit of a pickup at
like,
the end.
Like Schindler's List or something. People just start like fucking throwing pies about. Imagine like the end of Titan. Like Titan finishes and then the bloopers.
Titan bloopers. Ticket to Paradise had bloopers, and it was great. And more films should have bloopers during the credits. Watched The Woman King, which we're getting into later. Then I watched Mrs. Harris Goes to Paris. And Mrs. Harris Goes to Paris. This film shocked me.
I want a mini review of this.
Well, you're going to get one. Because it was great. It was really very good. A few months ago, maybe it was last year. Time is a blur now. We reviewed Phantom of the Open, the film about famed golfer Morris Flitcroft. And we said we didn't expect it to be as good as it was, not just in terms of how much we enjoyed it, but the actual craft of the filmmaking was great in Phantom of the Open. And that's exactly what Mrs. Harris Goes to Paris is. I expected just a sweet little film about Mrs. Harris going to Paris and getting a nice little dress. That's what I expected. It's actually a really well-made, beautiful film. The costume design is genuinely wouldn't surprise me if it made it into the Oscars. Same with production design. Production design is excellent in this film, as is the whole cast. Leslie Manville, amazing performance. Isabel Hooper, amazing. Unbelievable cast. Stacked performances. And it's really very emotional. You get very invested in the characters. Obviously, mainly Mrs. Harris and her journey to Paris. It's a brilliant film. It's very funny as well. It's not just kind of, you know, it feels like the kind of film that's targeted at middle-aged mums who want to go and watch a little funny, feel-good film. But it's funny. It was even funny to me. It was genuinely funny. I mean, there's one scene where Mrs. Harris causes a walkout. All of the workers who work at Dior, she causes them to go on strike, and she walks up to Christian Dior's office full of all of these workers on strike, and she's forcing them to strike, and Isabel Hooper's character stops her and says, "What are you doing?" And she points to the security guard and says, "Stop her, stop her." And the security guard says, "I'm a communist, I agree with her." And there are loads of scenes like that that are genuinely quite funny, genuinely entertaining. And it's really well made. The cinematography, the way that, because the whole point of this film is that Mrs. Harris is enchanted by this dress that she finds, and she's enchanted by the fashion world of Paris in the 1950s. And the way they shoot that, it really feels enchanting and magical. It feels really quite beautiful, and it's amazing. And genuinely, unironically, a fantastic film. I thoroughly enjoyed it. Had a smile on my face throughout and was shocked with how much I enjoyed it. Definitely recommend going to watch that.
Very good stuff. Very, very good stuff. What would you give a rating out of 10?
I would give it probably an 8.5 or a 9 out of 10.
Good stuff, man. Okay,
it was excellent. I watched quite a few other things, four of which I'm not going to review because we're going to get to them at some point, but I'm going to point out that I've seen them. This month, it was the London Film Festival, and the London Film Festival is obviously based in London.
Bloody fucking dar.
But there are several partner cinemas. There are several partner cinemas across the UK, one of which is in Manchester, two of which is in Manchester, technically. And I went to see four films. I saw Triangle of Sadness, which is out on the 28th of October, which is tomorrow as of the day of recording. I also saw Martin McDonagh's The Banshees of Inisherin with Colin Farrell and Brendan Gleeson. I also watched Park Chan-wook's Decision to Leave. And then, in a very spur-of-the-moment decision, I went to see Glass Onion, A Knives Out Mystery, the hotly anticipated sequel to Rian Johnson's Knives Out film with Daniel Craig. And I'm not going to review any of those, even though Banshees and Decision to Leave are out, because we're hopefully going to do an episode on them, because almost certainly, at least some of those films are going to be in the awards conversation. So no doubt we'll be talking them about them until mid next year. So there's no point in starting as early as this. Another film that I will talk about, though, only two more, is because of The Banshees of Inisherin being released, Martin McDonagh's In Bruges, his 2008, I'm almost certain it was his debut film, was re-released in my local cinema. And I went to see that. And it was very, very funny. If you don't know what it's about these two hitmen who are told by their boss to go. They have a job goes wrong, and they're told to go and wait in Bruges in Belgium, which is a very, according to the characters and the way the film presents it, a very boring, dull place to be. And it's about these two Irish hitmen going about their life in Bruges. It's very, very funny. Very emotional as well. It's really packs an emotional punch. That's the thing about Martin McDonagh with Three Billboards as well, is that it's very funny. He writes very funny dialogue, but the emotional current of the film is always the most important and most relevant thing. And In Bruges is probably at his best. Colin Farrell's performance in this is fantastic, truly amazing. And if you can watch it in a cinema, I think it's still showing in select cinemas, try and watch it in the cinema, because watching it was relatively sold out. It was very, very funny. It was very fun. I say relatively sold out, that's not really a phrase that makes sense, but it was relatively busy. And there was one man in there who had a very obnoxiously loud laugh that was very irritating. But nevertheless, it was a very fun experience. Fantastic film, really one of the best. And then the last thing I watched, other than Black Adam, because we're getting proper into detail on Black Adam, is the very controversial film, Billy Eichner's Bros, the gay rom-com film that taunts an entirely gay cast, I think crew as well. Even the straight characters are played by gay actors, and that's kind of what this film was marketed on, was being revolutionary and, you know, an unbelievable step for representation, which it kind of is. I mean, most gay films, most queer films, they do have straight actors, straight cast, straight crew, all playing gay. This film isn't that. This film has authentic queer representation, which is great. However, because of the way that Billy Eichner marketed this film as like a second Stonewall, I think people's expectations for it, people judged it too harshly. They kind of perceived it, because that's how it was marketed, as this very important, historical, groundbreaking film, when in reality, it's just a silly rom-com. And if you view it as a silly rom-com, it's actually pretty great. It's quite funny. I laughed a few times. I found myself surprised I was laughing at it. It calls Caitlyn Jenner a terrorist. It's a funny film, and it's genuinely entertaining. And I think if you view it as just a rom-com, which is how we should view queer films, we shouldn't view queer films. I think films like this often get put under more scrutiny than they should, because they're marketed as groundbreaking, and because we perceive them as groundbreaking, and we put a lot of pressure on them. But when you just view them as a normal average rom-com, which is what it should be viewed as, it's actually pretty great, and you should go and watch it, but not because it's amazing, queer, groundbreaking history, but because it's just a funny rom-com. And if they'd have marketed it like that, then it would have been more successful, I think, because it's genuinely an entertaining queer rom-com film, and I think it was great.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay. That's everything for you then, yeah?
That is everything, other than the films that we're talking about today.
Okay, let's get into the news. Now, for once, you're much like last episode, sorry, you decided to pull your finger out and and actually start doing the news rather than me for once. So I don't know any of this news. I don't know what you're going to throw at me, but I'm interested to hear it. So, by the way, apologies to any, if my audio is a bit weird, I'm recording in a garage. I don't usually do that. It's also raining outside. So if you can hear anything like that, my apologies. Hit me with some news.
I'll hit you with some news. There's quite a few things to talk about. Quite a lot of news, so I'll speed through most of it. Rings of Power became Amazon's biggest original show by far. It apparently 100 million Amazon subscribers watched it, which is a lot.
I have not watched it yet, but I'm very excited to do so, and I've heard very, very good things from my mother.
I also haven't watched it yet. I started watching the first episode, but I got distracted, so I didn't finish it. I've got this in the news, but really I should have mentioned this in what I've watched, because I have watched it. So I'm going to do a mini talk about it now. Werewolf by Night came out, Marvel's Halloween special, directed Michael Giacchino, who is normally a composer, but he's directed this. And it's their Halloween special. It came out, and I thought it was okay. You know, I'm not the biggest fan of Marvel, but I was willing to give it a chance because everyone around me was saying it's different, it's something new, it's something interesting, you should watch it. And apparently it was inspired by the horror films of the 1930s and 1940s, like Frankenstein, that you've watched. And as I said, those are some of the only horror films that I have seen. I generally stop at about 1970 with horror. And I love 30s and 40s horror, like Dracula and Frankenstein and The Bride of Frankenstein as well. So I gave it a go, and I was disappointed in that regard. I think the only way in which this is inspired by 1930s and 1940s horror is in that they said it was. There's nothing really in it that indicates that. One of my biggest issues with it, and I'm always banging on about aspect ratios, but this is shot in black and white to invoke that 30s and 40s horror, but it's still shot in widescreen, which to me, insane decision, because if you're trying to invoke the feel of 1930s and 40s horror, you think of two things: black and white mostly, and the thin 1.37 aspect ratio that was used for almost all films of that era. So to shoot this in modern widescreen, weirdly understandable decision. I don't understand why they did it, especially because they did so many other things to try and replicate the era. They put cue marks in the corner of the screen that were there to show projectionists when to change the reel of film, even though it was shot digitally and is on streaming. They put flex on the screen. They created film grain and flex and specs and spots on the screen. But they didn't change the aspect ratio, which is such an obvious thing they could have done to invoke that era. I've no idea why they didn't do it. It did, however, have some cool action scenes. So there we go. On to more of the news now. Kenneth Branagh's Hercule Poirot cinematic universe is getting a third installment. Many thought it wouldn't happen because
Death on the Nile
was not that successful at the box office, but it has been greenlit. It has been cast. Michelle Yeoh is in it. Jamie Dornan is in it. The kid, is he called Jude Hill from Belfast? I think that's his name. He's in it. And it's called A Haunting in Venice. And it's been greenlit and is in pre-production, apparently, which is very exciting.
Exciting stuff.
Yes. Speaking of Michelle Yeoh, you do know this because we both found it very insane. Michelle Yeoh and Pete Davidson have been cast in Transformers Rise of the Beast.
That is mad.
Weird. Weird casting news.
Anthony Hopkins was in the last Transformers.
He was. There is actually a weird... I told you about this when we spoke about it originally. There's a weird aligning between being in a Transformers film and then winning an Oscar. Anthony Hopkins was in a Transformers film and then won his second Oscar. Frances McDormand was in a Transformers film and then won her second Oscar. So Michelle Yeoh, in this Transformers film, she's one of the favourites to win an Oscar for Best Actress this year for Everything Everywhere All at Once. Is she going to be the third person to be in a Transformers film and then win an Oscar? Who knows? A few of the other news. This is very interesting to me. Very bizarre. I'd never expected this. Martin Scorsese's Gangs of New York, 2002 that it came out, is being turned into a TV series, with Martin Scorsese executive producing every episode and directing the first two episodes. Which is a very interesting piece of news. I would never have expected that, but it's happening.
Yeah, that is quite out there.
Yeah. I told you this the other day, but we're going to mention it anyway because it's very cool. Parasite has become the first film to join Letterboxd 2 million watched club, which means 2 million people have watched it, and it's the highest rated film on Letterboxd. So it's the most watched and highest rated film on Letterboxd, which is insane.
Very, very impressive.
Unbelievably impressive. And I remember saying to you the other day, like, it's very weird. You would never have thought it, that the highest rated film on Letterboxd is a Korean thriller. That's bizarre. Like, even though Parasite obviously became very mainstream, you'd still think it'd be Avengers or Batman or something like that. But the fact that the most watched film on Letterboxd is a Korean thriller, that's crazy. And it's amazing. So yeah, that happened.
It's like the vast majority, like vast majority of people that have watched it have rated it either 4.5 star or 5 star. Like, it's the average is it's averaged out at 4.6 out of 5. I think it's like,
that's crazy.
More than like, it's like, I think it's like half of people have given it a specifically 5 star rating. Like, that's mad.
That is mad, isn't it? It's so unbelievable how that film has become so popular, because it is actually that good. It's crazy.
Yeah, completely deserving. Completely deserving.
Oh yeah, absolutely. A few other pieces of news. I want to talk about this one briefly, and I want to get your thoughts on this one, because I have a complaint about something. Once again, Lewis is going to complain about Marvel, because I don't know if you've seen this, but Blade was going to be directed by Bassam Tariq, who directed Mogul Mowgli, and he dropped out. I think it was earlier this month. It may have even been before we recorded last time, but we didn't mention it. And since he dropped out, Blade has completely ceased pre-production. It was in pre-production, ready to film quite soon. It's now completely shut down pre-production, and they're searching for a new director. Because, apparently, Mahershala Ali, who is playing Blade, didn't like the direction that Bassam Tariq was taking the film in. Now, I don't know how you feel about this, but to me, that is very indicative of most of the issues I have with Marvel. Because to me, the director is in charge of the film, in charge of the creative decisions of the film. He is the creative driving force behind the film. And if an actor doesn't like the story, the way the film is going, then he either accepts it and shuts up or leaves. But the fact that Marvel care more about having their star, their actor in the lead role, than they do about having their director just shows that they think directors are just disposable. Oh, our star isn't happy with this director. We'll get a new director. We'll get a director who can basically appease the movie star rather than a director who will make a good film and the movie star will be in that film. Or if he doesn't like it, he can fuck off. I don't know how you feel about that, but to me, that's pretty much why I don't like Marvel films, is that these directors, they're not actually directing the films. They're just bowing down to whoever tells them what to do.
Yeah. Which is, I do understand what you mean. Which is one of the reasons why I think that a lot of the Marvel films that I enjoy the most are the ones that feel the most directed.
Yeah.
So I feel like, while some people say that you couldn't, I felt like you could still very much taste what Raimi does in Strange 2. And I do think that you can very much taste Taika Waititi's kind of specific brand of filmmaking in specifically Ragnarok, but to a lesser extent Love and Thunder. I think it's very indicative of, like, the Fast and Furious franchise. You know, like, Vin is the you know, Vin Diesel completely dominates. You know, it's the fact that Marvel are on that same kind of level of, like, as Fast and Furious in terms of their filmmaking, that it's just about getting the, you know, getting box office, just about getting, you know, whatever the star wants, making sure he's on the poster art, rather than going for, you know, cinematic excellence. Because ultimately, whilst, you know, having good performances can make a film, and good performances can, you know, really change the, you know, a good film to a great film, whatever. Ultimately, if you think about any kind of great film made in history, you can hypothetically construct a reality where you just, a different actor passed the audition. You can't think of the same film with a different director. You know, they, you know, no matter how good he is, you could still have, you know, you could have had a different veto in The Godfather. You could have a different kind of juror number 10 in 12 Angry Men. You couldn't have 12 Angry Men without Sidney Lumet. You couldn't have The Godfather without Coppola. You know, the fact that they have picked their star over their director shows that the filmmaking is not the importance here. It's the box office, it's the action, it's the toys. And you know, I guess that's true. That's a very Marvel problem.
Yeah. There's quite a lot of other news and we're using a lot of time, so I'm going to try and speed through a lot of it. To talk briefly about this, original horror is making a bomb at the box office. Not bombing at the box office, making a lot at the box office. Smile, which you're going to talk about, has made so far $175 million on a $17 million budget. And a film called Terrifier 2, which I've never even heard of, has made $6 million on a $250,000 budget, and it's not even had a wide release yet. Horror is basically bulletproof at the box office, and the fact that they released Halloween Ends on streaming at the same time, such a stupid decision, in my opinion.
I mean, I also think it's a really bad decision to release Halloween Ends at the start of October as well.
Yeah, that is true. Releasing it at the start of October on streaming services, it's a baffling decision.
It's called Halloween
news.
Ends, but Halloween has not even started when it was released.
That is true. Some sad news. We've had two sad celebrity deaths. Angela Lansbury has died of Gaslit and Beauty and the Beast fame. Which is very sad. So rest in peace, Angela Lansbury. She was lovely. Also, much more recently, Leslie Jordan has died. He died in a car crash, which, you know, he wasn't like old and died of natural causes. He was in a car crash, which was very sad. He was well known for Will and Grace and American Horror Story. And he also exploded in popularity on social media during the pandemic, which, you know, very sad. So rest in peace to those two people. Very
rest
sad.
In peace.
Yeah. Speaking of someone who died, William Hurt died a while ago, and he's finally been replaced in the Marvel Cinematic Universe as Thunderbolt Ross by Harrison Ford, of all people. Baffling casting decision to me, considering that Harrison Ford famously hates constantly being asked about his films, and now he's in a Marvel film, he will never be asked about anything else. Baffling decision.
Harrison Ford, though, famously big fan of money.
He is famously a big fan of money, but he has so much of it. Does he need more? No, but he wants more, so he's going to do it anyway.
I mean, let's not bring that conversation into it, because you could hear about all billionaires ever. Do they need more money? No, but they still made a new iPhone, didn't they?
That's true. but yeah, Harrison Ford is now in the MCU, which I never ever would have expected to happen. Some more back to Glass Onion, some Glass Onion news. Rian Johnson announced that Benoit Blanc is gay, which is interesting, has no impact whatsoever on anything, but now we know, apparently. Also about Glass Onion is getting a limited, wide theatrical release. Most Netflix films...
That makes
films,
no sense.
The release is limited, but it's wide in that every cinema is getting it. So it's only for a week, but every cinema is getting it. It's going in chain cinemas, so normally when Netflix original films go in cinemas, they only go kind of in independent cinemas or very, very small chains, so they never get shown in like Odeon or AMC or Regal theatres in America or Cineworld or Vue. But Rian Johnson's Glass Onion is getting a wide release worldwide for 1 week only. It's the first time Netflix has ever used this distribution method, but the Netflix CEO has said it won't happen again. It's not going to be a regular thing, which is very sad because I think it's a fantastic decision. Knives Out was a huge box office hit, and Glass Onion is also going to be a huge hit, and they could have made a killing on it at the box office. Pun intended. Some more news. Maybe this will interest you. Tobin Bell is back in the Saw franchise as Jigsaw.
Right.
Is that interesting to you?
They're still doing those?
They are, surprisingly. They are, yes.
I thought they were done with that shit. They made a spin-off. I thought that was them moving on.
No, apparently it's called Saw X, which I assume is Saw 10.
Oh, God.
But yes, he is back as Jigsaw. Speaking of horror films that you love, The Conjuring 3, The Devil Made Me Do It, is getting a sequel. The Conjuring 4 is in pre-production. No, it's not in pre-production, but it's been greenlit.
I love The Conjuring. So
not The Conjuring
I guess
3.
That's a good thing. I do not love The Conjuring 3, and I would strongly recommend anyone that enjoys this podcast to get serious psychological help. But other than that, I'd also seriously recommend anyone that enjoys the podcast to go back and listen to my review of The Conjuring 3, The Devil May Do It, because it is one of the podcast highlights, if I do say so myself.
It really is. It's a scathing review.
A scathing review.
It really was. Some more news.
I think I just start shouting abuse. I think I forget what the film happened and just start shouting abuse at it for like 10 minutes.
You do. You're very passionately angry against that film.
Yeah. Right.
The Safdie Brothers' next film has been greenlit and is in the works. It will star Adam Sandler. It will be on Netflix. And it will explore the world of high-end sports card collecting.
Let's be honest here. That just sounds like Uncut Gems.
It does, doesn't it? It sounds exactly like Uncut Gems, but instead of gems, it's sports cards.
It's to do with high-end valuables that's just aesthetics.
Yes. We also... This isn't really news, but I feel like it's worth mentioning. We got a trailer for Ant-Man 3. I haven't seen it, but it came out.
It does not look good. It does not look good.
I've not seen it. I'm excited to see it in the cinema for the first time and laugh at it. We also got a trailer for the Guardians Holiday Special.
Does look good.
Which, again, I haven't seen that trailer. We also got a trailer for Creed 3, Michael B. Jordan's directorial debut. So that's right. Interesting. Haven't seen that either, but looks interesting. Next up on the news, we've not got much left, is Damon Lindelof, the creator of Lost, is writing a Star Wars film. It's going to be directed by Oscar-winning short documentary filmmaker Sharmeen Obaid-Chinoy, who's won two Oscars, both for documentary short subject, and it's going to be set after the sequel trilogy, which is probably the least interesting time to set a Star Wars film, but that's when it's set.
That is incorrect.
In fact, that is true. The least interesting time is between Episode 6 and Episode 7.
The least interesting time is between 3 and 4, because we've so overdone it.
I guess so. But that's when it's set, and that's who's directing it and who's writing it. It will probably get cancelled, because every Star Wars film that gets greenlit gets cancelled eventually. Patty Jenkins' one was cancelled. Was it the Safdie Brothers? No, it was Benioff and Weiss, the Game of Thrones creators. They had one that got cancelled as well. So it'll probably get cancelled, it'll probably never come out. But for now, that's what it is. Speaking of Disney, big news for Doctor Who fans... Disney Plus is now the official and exclusive home of Doctor Who outside of the UK and Ireland, which you think is good. Why do you think it's good? So I agree, but you take it away and say why it's good.
Yeah, I'm a big Doctor Who fan, of course. We've been watching it together. Right, so of course I have issues with Disney, more the company than the content, and this is kind of company-based. However, I will willing to bite the bullet on this one, because Disney Plus is kind of the only streaming service that I think is kind of generating money at this point, and it's one that almost everyone has, and it also has quite a small library, especially in America, where they don't have Disney Plus Star. So the idea that it's a streaming service that everyone has without that much content on means that a lot of people, especially in America, will be kind of pushed towards watching Doctor Who. And I think that can only be a good thing. It left Netflix in America a few years ago, I believe. It left Netflix in the UK a few years ago, I believe, which definitely led to a decrease in popularity in the UK. I think it really helped to get a lot of people into it on Netflix. So having it available on an easily accessible stream service in America and other countries will be a good thing for the popularity of the show. I think the show's popularity will boom, of course, in the last few weeks. We're going to do Doctor Who episodes, so we'll talk about it then. Last few weeks... last few days, really, we've had the Doctor Who 100th anniversary of the BBC had a special where, minor spoilers, the Doctor regenerated. I should not say who it is, just in case you don't know. So I think Russell T Davies coming in, Chuty Gatwa, David Tennant, everything. I think the show's going to blow up. I think it's the best way to have it. And I also am happiest because it's not leaving BBC iPlayer in the UK. But so for us UK people who Doctor Who's an institution, it should be free. And I'm happy that it's not leaving BBC iPlayer in England. I would not have a problem if it was on iPlayer and Disney Plus, but I'm happy that it's not leaving iPlayer. So, yeah.
Yeah, I completely agree. And to put any qualms at bay, to rest anyone's worried minds, Disney is not involved in the production of this. It's still BBC produced. It's still made by the BBC. Disney have just got distribution rights worldwide, which also means...
No longer true, really. BBC are no longer producing Doctor Who. I believe it is now being produced by Bad Wolf Productions, which is Russell T. Davies' studio.
That is true, but it's not Disney, crucially. they just have distribution rights, and they will be paying, I imagine, a fuck ton of money for the distribution rights, exclusive distribution rights. That will be very expensive.
Oh, again. I'm so excited.
And they're going to have a lot more money for the budget, presumably, so it's probably going to explode in popularity come 2023, the end of 2023, which is when Disney get their distribution rights. Last two bits of news. These are kind of linked, but not particularly. I'm not really going to count this as a spoiler for Black Adam, because it has been announced completely separately for Black Adam, but if you don't want to know anything about anything at all, this is kind of a spoiler for Black Adam, although it's not, because it's been announced completely separately, and that is that Henry Cavill is back as Superman in a Man of Steel sequel that is in early production. Do you not know this?
I'm joking.
Oh, right. I was so shocked then. I was like, they've announced this officially. Henry Cavill is back as Superman. Man of Steel 2, it may be called Man of Steel 2, but it's a sequel to Man of Steel, is in early, very early production. And potentially the biggest piece of news, that is probably the biggest piece of news, but arguably fighting for the biggest piece of news is another big change at DC. And that is, DC has a new new CEOs running DC Studios. So DC Film is currently what it's called. In November, I think it's November the 3rd, it's going to be rebranded as DC Studios, and it will be run by Peter Safran and James Gunn of Guardians of the Galaxy and the Suicide Squad fame. They are now in charge of DC Film Studios. All DC films, all DC animation, all DC TV is going to be run by James Gunn and Peter Safran, which is genuinely shocked me unbelievable amount, because it was just a few years ago that James Gunn was being fired from Marvel, and now he's running DC, which is a very strange career trajectory. And
in that meantime, he made bank on a DC project, came back to Marvel, made two more films, and then left again. So yes, he kind of did win on that one.
He did. Say, the person who found those tweets to try and tried to end his career, and in reality has just boosted him, because if it weren't for that, then his Marvel contract wouldn't have been broken and he wouldn't have been able to work for DC. So
yeah,
that's why this is going to happen.
I think this is a good thing. One of the main reasons I think this is a good thing is that one of the big problems that DC has had is their kind of direct... Same thing we said about Marvel, really. But even so, more than Marvel, it seems they've had that kind of direction by committee thing where they've been very involved with all of their projects, and they have been all based on, you know, what they think is going to do well, rather than letting the directors have their kind of say on it. Hence why Batman vs Superman had so much cut. Hence why Justice League needed the whole Snyder cut thing, because they disagreed with Snyder and they cut his stuff and they got a new director in. Obviously, that situation with Snyder and all that shit that went on for years with the Snyder cut and David Ayer's version of Suicide Squad, all this shit. It's just that the Warner Brothers were very involved with their films, and kind of the films where the directors got to show their own styles a bit more, like Kathy Yan's Birds of Prey, seem to be the kind of, you know, peaks of the kind of of the universe, or James Gunn's Suicide Squad. So that's been the main problem, and Gunn himself has been very vocal about not liking studios getting involved with his work. So assuming he isn't a massive hypocrite, which, you know, you can assume he's not, he won't be getting involved personally with the work, and won't getting the studio to be involved directly in the work of other directors, which should lead, hopefully, to better or at least more diverse films.
I have to say, I strongly disagree with what you just said about DC films feeling directed by committee rather than by director. I think DC films, yes, there's been a lot of studio involvement, but it's been studio involvement after the fact. The films themselves, Man of Steel and Batman vs Superman, they are distinctly Zack Snyder films. Even though the studio messed up the cut that was released, very distinctly Zack Snyder films. And, you know, Aquaman and Birds of Prey and Wonder Woman, they feel completely different. I mean, when I watch The Suicide Squad, Birds of Prey. I am baffled that is in the same
Birds
universe
of Prey is
as Batman vs. Superman.
Exception to the rule. You could not tell me.
I disagree.
You had
I
no
think
chance
Batman vs. Superman.
Watch Wonder Woman and tell me who directed it.
Well, no, because I'm not very familiar with Patty Jenkins' style, but it's still director-driven. It feels completely different to Aquaman and Batman vs. Superman and Justice League. They all feel different. They all feel unique. Especially Batman vs. Superman, because the studio interference came after the film was finished and came with the editing, not the actual directing. So I very
but
much disagree with that.
But that's still a massive part of the thing. Ultimately, I think the ultimate of Batman vs. Superman is a far, far better film. I still think it's still pretty average overall, but it's a far, far better film than the theatrical. Like, way better.
Yeah.
And if the studio
definitely,
is
I'm
making
not saying
sure
that...
the edit's that different, then it's going to be a kind of big concern.
Yeah, I'm not saying that studio interference isn't an issue at DC or hasn't been an issue at DC. It absolutely has. But I don't think it's been interference on a directing level. It's been an interference on an after-the-fact, what cut do we want to edit and release level. I think that DC films feel distinct. Each one of them feels distinct from one another. You know, Aquaman and Man of Steel do not feel like they're set in the same universe, and that yet they are, because they're so distinctly directed and distinctly made that they feel different. Nevertheless, I am excited to see what James Gunn and Peter Safran do with DC. New studio heads, because it's not just like they're completely revamping it. It's not just like they've got a new boss. They've been rebranded. It's not DC Films anymore. It's DC Studios. They've also changed the name of the universe. It's not the DC EU anymore. It's just the DCU.
Yeah.
Which, you know, cool.
Yeah, nice. Yeah.
There is one more piece of news that I've saved.
That whole DCU idea, because, you know, it's not really worked out for the best.
It's just makes sense. But they've invested too much money into it. I don't know. I think the DCU will continue. It will persevere on, and eventually I think they'll find their way. There's one more piece of news that I've saved till the end. I almost forgot about it, because it's not that big, but you and I will be interested in it, because it's to do with Pablo Larraín, director of very good film Spencer, and also very good film, but not quite as good film as Spencer, Jackie. His next film has been announced. It's been greenlit. We know what it is. We know who it's about. We know who's in it. Pablo Larraín's past two films have been about tragic historical women. This one is no different. This will be about the world's greatest opera singer, Maria Callas, and she will be played by Angelina Jolie in a film called Maria, set in 1970s Paris in her final days in 1970s Paris.
My guess is that this will be his last before he moves on to something else, and this will be seen as like a tragic woman trilogy.
I know why I agree with you, but at the same time, I feel like, why do we feel that? I think we just think that because trilogies tend to happen.
I think it's very common that people, like, especially like more intelligent, like kind of artsy filmmakers, tend to have like thematic trilogies, like the Oslo trilogy that Joachim Trier.
Yeah, that's
or
true.
Three Colour trilogy, whatever. I imagine that like, I don't know if he'll just keep doing this forever.
I don't think he'll continue making films about very sad, depressed women.
I think specifically the titles as well being their names.
Yeah. Jackie, Spencer, Maria.
Yeah.
But that Spencer, excites Maria me a lot. I know nothing about... It does, doesn't it? Jackie, Spencer, Maria. But I don't know anything about Maria Callas, who is apparently the world's greatest opera singer. I've never heard of her, but I'm excited to learn all about her.
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm sure there's no one I'd like to show me more than Pablo Larraín. Let's talk about some actual reviews. Let's review some films. Let's do what we get paid to do.
Indeed, that is the end of the news. It's been a busy month. We have been off for a month, bear in mind, so that's why there's been a lot of news. Apologies if you're not interested in news. But still, you know, if you don't like it, who cares? This is our podcast, not yours.
Much like DC, I'll make sure it's a lot smoother in the edit.
Yes.
Okay, let's talk about Smile, which is a film that you saw and I didn't.
That is not true. Let's talk about Smile. Let you talk about Smile. I'm grinning wide.
Really? Well, that might not be a good thing, Lewis. If Parker Finn is to be believed. Right,
the trailer for Smile scared me enough. I definitely will not be watching it.
Smile. The premise of Smile is that, and you can tell from the trailer, the premise of Smile is that there's a doctor, Dr. Rose Carter, played by Sosie Bacon. She witnesses one of her patients. She's a psychiatrist. She witnesses one of her patients grinning madly before killing herself in front of her. And then bizarre, kind of horror-y things start to happen in her life. And she finds out that that people that have witnessed this phenomena don't have very long to live. Now, that's the concept of it. You know, you're kind of locked into this, and the film is exploring why does this happen? Who does it happen to? How do you fix it? Can you fix it? All this stuff, right? So I saw the trailer a few months ago. Of course, big horror fan myself, so I was instantly intrigued in the new original horror. Now, the trailer I thought looked abysmal. I thought it looked laughably bad. And I was like, okay, this is going to be another B-tier horror film. Then the film started to get press screenings and released, and I was hearing increasingly good things. People comparing it to kind of more creative horror films of recent years, like Malignant or Barbarian. And I was excited for The Black Phone, which I wasn't a particularly big fan of, but, you know, interesting premise. So I really decided to buy into Smile. And when I went to watch the film, I turned out that my initial thoughts were right. The film is absolutely garbage.
Damn. How disappointing for horror fans.
This is one of the times where I'm talking candidly about this. I do not understand why this is getting positive reviews. This is absolute garbage fire. Now, I understand this is a directorial and writing debut for any feature for Parker Finn, and I can understand there is potential in there, mainly because it's an interesting concept, right? He may not have especially the writing down yet, but I'm sure that we'll look back in the future and say, you know, you could tell there were signs of his quality there. Now, the signs are perhaps not enough, because the writing feels like it was done by a seven-year-old in creative writing class. It does not feel at all human. I think that there's a lot of bad things about this. Ultimately, the screenplay is the worst. I think the screenplay is absolutely awful. That is not particularly helped by a very lackluster cast. I don't want to name names, but if I did choose to name names, I would choose the name of Jesse T. Usher, who plays the boyfriend, who is absolutely abysmal. I think Sosie Bacon is passable. I think as the lead, I think she's passable, but every other one of her supporting performers are not on a level that she did not deserve to be seen on a screen that big at this point in their careers. Perhaps the exception is Rob Morgan, who plays another ex kind of victim of this smiling craze thing. He appears in prison in one scene. Anyone seen it? Perhaps the only strong scene in the film. I will say that his performance and that whole scene is very well made. Other than that, it's very poor. The story is, again, the premise is interesting. You have some interesting stuff to work with early on. However, towards the end and in the conclusion, you're seeming to have just different kind of cliche horror situations thrown together. I think the kind of grand reveal is actually very pointless. Didn't manage to scare me at all. I'll say this film, I did not find this film scary at any point, which I think was a big failure of the film. Now, I will give the flowers to the cinematographer, who is Charlie Saroff, who this film does not need to have exceptional cinematography. You would not walk into this film at all expecting exceptional cinematography. However, you are agree with it. I think the film looks beautiful, and I really hope this guy gets better gigs in the future. I thought the Smile, creative, but creatively poor. The acting was not good, the writing was not good. The story was, again, had promise, ended up kind of covered in cliche, visually interesting, But I really don't understand why this is being talked about in any positive way. I really did struggle for this. I think this is, on the same level as things like, on the similar level in terms of horror as things that I've previously reviewed, such as Conjuring 3 or The Unholy. When it comes to ratings, I'm going to give this I want to give him a little bit of leeway. It's his first project, so I'm not going to be as harsh as I would for someone that's perhaps a wider career. I also say the premise is interesting and cinematography is genuinely good. So I'm going to give it a little bit of credit and I'm going to give it a 3.5, perhaps rising to a 4. I'm going to say 3.5. When it comes to Man of the Match, as I just alluded to, another good, last week I was giving a lot of, or last episode I was giving a lot of praise to cinematographers. Once again, going to do the same thing. Charlie Saroff, definitely the highlight of the film, was how good it looked. So Charlie Saroff gets it for me.
Fair enough. That was not the review I expected. I'd heard very, very, very good things about Smile.
Yeah, brutal that, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. Not quite as brutal as your Conjuring 3 review.
I was kind of mean there.
Yeah. You were quite nice, though, at the end. You were like, I'm going to admit it's his first project, so I'm not going to be that harsh. Conjuring 3, you went in.
Yeah, I mean, it's not as bad as Conjuring 3. But it is not a massive gap, I'll put it that way. But it is not as bad as The Conjuring 3. But it wasn't great, I'll put it that way. Why? I just feel like in the horror genre specifically, and I'm not talking kind of Jordan Peele-esque kind of, intelligent, thinky, allegorical horrors, I'm talking about more traditional horror films, which, again, I hate the way that there's kind of this modern thing that, slashers are stupid and, Get Out is intelligent. I think that all, great slashers are kind of actually basking in allegory. They might just be a little bit more hidden about it. I think that there's this kind of pretentiousness about horror is dumb. But I do notice that in recent years, especially in more kind of traditional horror, like stuff like this and stuff like The Black Phone and The Conjuring and etc., that it seems like there seems to be less and less of an effort put into good, intelligent screenplay writing. It seems to be that it's all on direction, it's all on the horror, and it just feels like I'm really calling out for some original horror of this ilk that actually feels like it's written intelligently. Like, I'm just getting a little bit, bogged down with it all, to be honest. I want to see writing that's worthy of, the box office numbers that it's getting, and having this is kind of the flagship of horror. You know what I mean? So it's starting to get to me a bit. I'm getting a bit pissed off. I want to see some good horror scripts.
Fair enough. Can't relate, but fair enough.
Yeah, I don't know. Because that was the problem with Black Phone as well. The screenplay just wasn't great.
Oh, no.
Okay, we'll move on. We'll move on. So, next up, we're going to be talking about The Woman King, which is a film which is semi-controversial, and we'll get to that in a minute. This is a historical action drama starring, as I said earlier, Viola Davis, Thuso Mbedu, Lashana Lynch, John Boyega, Hero Finds Tiffin, and more. And it is the story of the Agoge, who are a group of all women warriors that are part of the Kingdom of Dahomey, the African Kingdom of Dahomey. And it follows a young girl called Nawi who is recruited and joins the group of women fighters, and it kind of shows her training and growing up whilst also dealing with the threats of from other African countries and also colonialists. As you say, it's in the 1800s, again based on true story. However, there's been some controversy around the level of truth around this film. Perhaps this isn't the most that there is actually a kind of less pro-slave history. A less anti-slave history than the film may portray. But we're not educated enough, so I think we'll just kind of try and avoid the subject. I think and talk about it on a purely artistic level. as I said earlier, directed by Gina Prince Bythewood, who directed the first ever contemporary film recorded on the Now Show, reviewed on the Now Show podcast, which was The Old Guard, starring Charlize Theron. So, what do you think of The Woman King, Lewis?
I'm going to come out and say it. I enjoyed The Woman King. I thought it was very, very good. I did have high expectations. A lot of people, when it first came out, it took me a while to go and see it. A lot of people were saying it's one of the best. It's, you know, Oscar nomination, which naturally gives you high expectations, which I don't like, but you can't help it when you hear these things. But nevertheless, it was great. I thoroughly enjoyed it. It was a very, very emotional film. A lot of action in the film that is shot very brutally, brutally and beautifully, or brutally, as I just said. That's a nice portmanteau. Anyway, I think the cinematography was stunning in this film. Polly Morgan did the cinematography, and it was amazing. It really captured the scale of the scenery in terms of the amount of people in this army, in these areas, and it captured the beauty of Africa and Dahomey as well. It was stunning. And the production design, also great. And the story was very, very character-driven. You know, it was about this young woman who was thrust into this world and kind of has to find her way among these people and has to stand out from the rest. And from an acting standpoint, it's kind of the same thing. You have Viola Davis, who is one of the best working actors today, in the lead role. And then you have this new person who I've never heard of. I don't know if they've been in much, or they've certainly not had many lead roles. Thuzo Mbedu, who is unbelievable in this role, going up against people like Lashana Lynch and Viola Davis, and Sheila Atim as well. Unbelievable lead performance from her. Honestly, she blew me away. I was gobsmacked by how amazing she was, that she portrayed every ounce of agony and grief on this character, but also the hope and the determination in this character. You know, there are some scenes where she is really put through it, both as a character and as an actress, and she delivered every single scene. She blew me away. And the fact that she's up against Viola Davis, and I don't know about you, I don't know how many people would agree with me on this, I think she outdid Viola Davis, which isn't really relevant, but it's impressive as fuck to say that she outdid Viola Davis, in my opinion. People watching this film saying Viola Davis deserves an Oscar nomination for this, they are overlooking Thuso Mbedu, who is stunning in this film. She is the, if anyone deserves an Oscar nomination, it's her. She is fantastic in this film. She really is. I'm not saying Viola Davis doesn't deserve a nomination. She is fantastic, but that's not really relevant. I was just using that to praise everyone else in the film. But yeah, I was amazed by the acting in this film above all else. But the cinematography was stunning. I thought the editing was stunning. The music was stunning. Everything about this film, I really thoroughly enjoyed it. I did feel like in the middle, the second act, I thought that was the most engaging, the kind of story of her training with the Agoji and her trying to get accustomed to this new life. I thought that was the most engaging part. The beginning, it took a while to get off for me. It took a while for me to get into it. But when I did get into it, I was hooked and I was completely invested in where it was going. And then the ending really hits home as well. I think it's a fantastic film. I really do. Also bizarre that Hero Finds Tiffin is in this from the After film franchise, which I have criticized a lot historically. And also, yeah, he is famously a horrible actor. He's not horrible in this. Don't know if you thought that. He was okay in this. But yeah, I very much enjoyed The Woman King. Almost nothing but praise. The costume design as well was amazing. Almost nothing but praise, apart from the fact that the first act, I thought the first act was a bit slow. It took a while for me to get into it. What did you think of The Woman King?
What did I think of The Woman King? Well, I'm thinking, basically, if based off this and The Northman, please can Hollywood start making more historical epics, because fucking hell, they go hard. They go so hard. I absolutely loved The Woman King. I really did not have much expectation going in, positive or negative. I just did not really have much build up to it. And I came out of the film grinning my face off. I thought that this was an absolute masterclass in atmosphere, in acting, in storytelling, in visuals, sound design. I thought this was absolutely wonderful. I loved The Woman King. Okay, so how do I look at this? Well, I'll say I agree with you completely about Thusa and Bedu, who, again, up against the likes of Viola Davis, Lashana Lynch, John Boyega. I think she's absolutely excellent. I think that, you know, a star is in the making, is no, you know, is perhaps a cliche, but is definitely true in her case. Is she better than Viola Davis? I'm not sure it's a fight I particularly involved in, because I think they're both wonderful. I think Viola Davis continues to prove in this performance that she is one of the best working actors, or one of the best actresses ever.
Yeah.
Visually, again, you know, actually, you know, the cinematography in the action scenes was much like The Northman. You know, them two stand above almost anything else you're going to see this year. You know, most superhero flicks have such a focus on action, but I've never seen a superhero film with better looking action than the films that we're talking about today. I was talking about there. When it comes to the plot, I thought that it was engaging throughout. I thought that the way that it built up the foes, the two kind of different foes, you know, colonizers and other African country kingdoms, the way that it built them both up gradually made it feel completely natural when each kind of foe came into the fold. It never felt surprising, or never felt shoehorned in. I think everything was set up very well. The characterization was wonderful. You know, it's a very character-driven film, and both the character Nabi and Naniska, who the whole film revolves around, the kind of the dynamic between them two, both of them are feel very, very human. Helped by the wonderful performances, but it doesn't help. It doesn't hurt that the writing was so good. It does kind of have a slightly cliche premise. A lot of the film is kind of training montages and her trying to, you know, prove, you know, she's the best young, you know, it's, you know, there's a million films that do the same thing, you know, The Karate Kid or Doctor Strange or anything. But it even though it's a kind of familiar kind of story thread, or, you know, second act premise, you know, I think the fact that it's shot so well, and also because we care so much for the characters, you know, it never felt particularly, or Ender's Game actually is another one that came to my mind while I was watching, actually, a comparison. I was like, oh, this is a bit like Ender's Game, which, you know, maybe the first time in like 10 years anyone's thought about Ender's Game. Yeah, no, I think you know, because we're so attached to the character by that point, I think, you know, you're happy to spend that time with them. And also I think that the final trial that is presented kind of to dictate who kind of gets accepted into the Agoji is one of the best film scenes of the year. I thought it was wonderful. It was tense. Yeah. It was like, you know, even though it was just a bunch of girls, you know, trying to compete in their own kind of local competition, you know, it felt as tense and as exciting, as important as, you know, the taking of Omaha Beach and Saving Private Ryan, you know. Yeah, sounded beautiful. Score was wonderful. One of the best scores of the year. Some of the cinematography of the year. Excellent writing, excellent acting. I have no notes, really. I think it was just, yeah, I enjoyed it thoroughly from beginning to the end. I guess my one issue is that I feel like the second act, which is what you praised, actually, I thought the second act dragged on a little bit. I think I kind of felt like I was kind of already understanding the point. We maybe kind of sat around in this kind of same area for a little bit too long, but I guess that allows you for some characterization, so I can't really make complaint too much. I thought it was a delight, and I think a lot of the same praise I can, funnily enough, give to The Northman, I'll give to this, you know.
I have to say as well, I did mention it, but I forgot to kind of praise her properly. Sheila Atim in this, who plays Amenza, she was amazing as well. I think she gave one of the best supporting performances I've seen so far this year. She was genuinely fantastic. And I have just scrolled through all of the films I've seen this year. So not every film from this year, but all of the films I've seen from this year. And I can't think of a better leading performance than Thuso Mbedu in this film. I can't think of a performance that outshines her in this film, and Viola Davis as well. Although weirdly, I'd put Viola Davis in a supporting category.
Austin Butler, Elvis.
Well, that is true. I was thinking about Best Actress rather than Best Actor.
Oh, right. Okay, I was going to say.
But Michelle certainly Yeoh. Women. Oh, that's true. Michelle Yeoh. No, you know what? I think Thuza Wamberu is better in this than Michelle Yeoh in Everything Everywhere All at Once. I really do. I think she was genuinely... Although maybe it's partly I know Michelle Yeoh. I know how good she is. I had no idea about Thuza Wamberu before I watched The Woman King. I had no expectations and she blew me away. She was fantastic. Watch out for her in the future because she is stunning.
Yeah, it's a real ensemble piece because you get quite a lot of time with each one of kind of the main character, well, the kind of main 10 characters, especially people that are in that, in the Dahomey camp. So yeah, like Viola Davis and Bedu, John Lynch, Sheila Atim, John Boyega, you get like a lot of time with all of them, and some more. I think they're all really good. It's actually kind of, I want to praise all of them. You know, I want to go out and say, I think the Sean Lynch is absolutely excellent, but I also think that Sheila Atim, who I don't know so well, is wonderful as well. And I think this is, you know, Boyega's best performance in quite a few years. So, I think one thing I didn't praise actually was how well the world is created, which you did praise. But I just want to say that my thoughts on that, I think the world is created so wonderfully with the, not necessarily just how it's shot and how, you know, how it's scored and all the stuff that I keep talking about, technical aspects, but how the world is made in terms of set design, costume design, makeup. Yes. It looks so livable. It looks so believable. It looks so
the real. Hair design as well.
That, yeah,
hair
yeah,
design, hair and makeup.
Just, yeah. Yeah, excellent. All of it. Very, very well
made. It really is, yeah. And I think as well, it's amazing how, you're right, we do spend a lot of time with each different character. But to me, it always manages to make Nawi, who is Mbedu's character, she is always at the center of it for me. And I think that it's very impressive how they weaved this narrative and about Nawi, but involved so many other characters who also got completely fleshed out arcs and journeys throughout the film. While still keeping this one character, and Naniska as well, so I suppose you could say two characters, keeping them at the centre of it all. Very impressive to do that in a screenplay, and the director as well. I mean, I'm thoroughly impressed by this film.
More historical epics.
Absolutely. More of them.
More of them, please. Okay, so what will you say ratings-wise for this film?
When I first watched it, I was like, that's an 8 out of 10. It's been a while since we watched it. I think if we reviewed it like a week after I watched it, I'd give it an 8 out of 10. The more I've sat with it and now speaking about it, it's not an 8 out of 10. It's so good. I think I have to give this a 9 out of 10. 9.5 out of 10. The only issue is that I think the first act didn't grab me straight away. So it's a 9.5 out of 10. Other than the fact that the first act didn't get me straight away, I have no complaints about this.
Yeah, I'm even at 9.5. Yeah, I agree. Yeah. Okay. Man of the match, I actually think is a very, very hard one here because I talked a lot about the acting, I've talked a lot about Mbedu, but I think that there's so many different wonderful aspects to this film.
Yeah, it is very, very difficult. But at the same time, it's very easy because, as you've said, and as I've said, this film is amazing. The cinematography is amazing. The editing is amazing. The production design, set design, hair, makeup, costumes, everything. The directing. We've barely mentioned the directing. The directing is amazing. Gina Prince-Bythewood, unbelievable directing in this film. It's not really like her other films. And she came into this and did amazing. But for me, the man of the match is Thuzo Mbedu for her unbelievable performance as Nawi. Genuinely blew me away. Genuinely shocked. She is the man of the match for this, for me. What about you?
It's actually really hard. I didn't really talk about it in the review much. It's actually one of the things that I didn't really talk about, which is kind of funny because that's kind of what you say, to have a trend of not talking about something and then giving it a man of the match.
Yes.
But I did talk about, I don't know whether to go for Davis and Bedu, or I think I'm going to give it to Akin McKenzie, I believe. Is it Akin McKenzie? Is that her name? Akin McKenzie, who is the production designer, because I think that it was so vital for the historical element of the historical epic that we felt truly like we were looking into 1800s Africa. And I think the design of the camp and the city and the port and everything was just so well done. So I'm going to give it to the production designer, Aki McKenzie.
Yeah, that's fair. That was a good decision. I agree.
Okay. So now we're going to be moving on to a film that I have not seen, which is Black Adam, which promises to kind of be the, as we teased in our intro, to change the hierarchy of the DC Universe forever. It stars Dwayne The Rock Johnson as I don't really know. So give me Jam Colette Sarah directed it. It stars The Rock. I know Pierce Brosnan's in it. Give me a basic plot of what happens in Black Adam without giving any spoilers. No spoilers.
No spoilers. This is spoiler free. Black Adam is about a character called Teth Adam. It's not called Black Adam. It's called Teth Adam, who is a slave from 5,000 years ago in this Middle Eastern country, which the name of it, I can't remember. I think it's fictional. And he is given the power of Shazam. But he's very angry and vengeful, and so he's a villain. And 5,000 years later, in the modern day, he is awoken, and he is there to protect this country and this city. But times have changed a lot, and so Amanda Waller decides we have to capture him, and he has to be in prison, so we can use him as part of the Suicide Squad. So she sends the Justice Society, which is made up of Hawkman, Dr. Fate, Atom Smasher, and Cyclone, four superheroes, and they are tasked with stopping Black Adam from wreaking havoc on the world. And that is the basic plot of Black Adam. There's twists and turns that make it more exciting, but that is the plot without any spoilers.
Okay, nice. Now, what do you think of the film?
Before I give my review of Black Adam, may I go on a tangent? I'm not asking, this is what I'm going to do. I kind of touched on this when we reviewed Don't Worry, Darling. What has happened to people in the cinema? Why can we not just watch a film in the cinema anymore? People's etiquette in the cinema has disappeared. I mentioned when we reviewed Don't Worry, Darling, people were sighing and groaning. People booed when Olivia Wilde came on screen. And it was exactly the same in this. People were talking. People were taking pictures of the screen with the flash on. You know, this film came out. I saw it the day that it came out. And within a day, people had uploaded clips on Twitter, entire clips, pictures taken with the flash on, entire cinemas, rows of the cinema. Something happened in this film. About 5 camera flashes went off because people were taking pictures of the screen. When did it become normal to just get your phone out in the middle of a film and record minutes of footage and put it on the internet? Take pictures with the flash on, not even discreetly. When did this become normal?
How much of the blame are you putting on Matt Ramos?
I am putting a lot of blame on Matt Ramos, but also I'm putting a lot of blame on stan culture in general, because I think it was mainly because of Harry Styles in Don't Worry Darling, and I think it was mainly because of the way that The Rock marketed this. The way that it was marketed made it kind of become a bit of a meme, and I think nobody was taking it seriously. So yeah, please sort your shit out, learn how to behave in the cinema. Stop acting like 2-year-olds. You're grown adults. You don't need to scream when something happens. And if you're going to take a picture of the screen, do it discreetly, not with the flash on. And don't record minutes of footage and then put it on Twitter the day it comes out. Sort your shit out. Start behaving properly in the cinema. But the film itself, Black Adam, you and I had discussed this. You said the trailer looked shit. Oh no, you said the trailer looked okay, didn't you?
Yeah, I thought the trailer looked kind of intriguing.
Yeah, I said the trailer looks shit, but I think it'll be okay. And I was pretty much right. I was, this was okay. People are acting. Again, I'm blaming stan culture for the conversation around this film. People are acting like this is the worst film ever made, on same level as Suicide Squad, the David Ayer one, and Morbius. And it's nowhere near that. It's perfectly serviceable. Is it an achievement? Is it a cinematic achievement? No, but it's perfectly serviceable. It's not bad. It's okay. It's good. That's a very low bar to set, but that's all it is. You know, it's not. It no, nobody expected this. Nobody thought this was going to be, you know, award-winning festival darling. Everyone knew this was just going to be a fun popcorn flick, and that's what it is. It's fun. Dwayne The Rock Johnson, whether you like him or not, he can hold a blockbuster. He can be in a blockbuster and do well. And he does it in this film. He is Black Adam. He gives a performance exactly the same as every other performance he's ever given. But he does it well. And the rest of the cast are quite good. Aldis Hodge is great. Noah Centineo is great. Sarah Shahi is great, who plays the human character. They're all great. Quintessa Swindle is great. Pierce Brosnan is the standout star of this film. His character, Dr. Fate, is very interesting, very, very cool. I want more Dr. Fate content. I really do. And yeah, that's what Black Adam is. It's not got impressive cinematography, impressive editing. It's got pretty decent cinematography. But when I was talking about this film with someone, I said, this film tries to be more. It tries to be impressive. It tries to be something like, you know, you and I disagree on this, but it tries to be a Top Gun Maverick. Well, we don't disagree on this. We disagree with everyone else. Yeah. We think Top Gun Maverick is shit. But it tries to be what everyone else thinks Top Gun Maverick is. And no, it doesn't hit that. It doesn't hit that level of filmmaking. I mean, even we can appreciate the filmmaking in Top Gun Maverick. The cinematography during the action scenes is very impressive. It tries to be that, and it never hits that. But I would much rather watch a film that tried to be a 10 out of 10 and failed and ended up being a 3 out of 10 than a film that never tries to be anything more than a 5 out of 10. At least it had ambition. You can tell that this was made with passion. They wanted to make this. They were passionate about this. They cared. They were having fun. And they wanted to impress the fans with this. The story, it's a simple story. It's relatively predictable. Even if there are some twists and turns, you do see them coming. But it's very, very okay. It's fun, though. It's a fun action blockbuster. And people are being very, very cruel on it because it became a meme. The way The Rock was marketing it, it became a meme. And people aren't taking it. They're not even giving it a chance. They're taking one frame that has been taken in a picture of the screen in the cinema, and they're tearing it apart. But in the film, it makes sense. It's fine. It's perfectly serviceable. And I enjoyed it. It's not bad. It's not awful. Don't let people tell you that it's the worst thing in the world. I saw someone say, we have a new contender for the worst villain in the DCEU. He was horrific. This was awful. And it's like, no. Were they great? Not particularly, but they weren't any worse than every other villain that's been in a superhero blockbuster for the past 10 years. They were perfectly fine. And that's what this film is. But the thing that sets it apart is this was clearly made by people who cared. They wanted to make something special. And yes, they failed, but at least they tried. You know, it's like people say, if you, you know, aim for the moon, because even if you miss, you'll be among the stars. That's what this did. They aimed high, and yes, they missed, but they still made something that is driven by their passion. And that's, you know, I've been trying not to mention Marvel in this review because it's a DC film and everyone always compares them. But my biggest issue with Marvel is that they never try to be anything more than just a serviceable blockbuster. And this tries to be something more. And yes, this ends up being just a serviceable blockbuster. But it tried to be something more. It tried to be interesting. It tried to be different. It stands out. And that's what I love about it. I kind of love its plucky optimism in that it tried to do something special, even if it failed. Because it's not, even though I'm saying it failed, it's not bad. It's certainly not bad. It's a fun blockbuster. And go and see it, and don't get your phone out and take pictures of the screen with the flash on when you do. And I think you'll enjoy it. I think you'll have fun. Will I go back to it in 10 years and think, God, that was a great film? Probably not. But I don't do that with most films that I watch. People are being very harsh on Black Adam. It's a good film. Although, one thing I will say, Teth Adam is his name in the film. And they keep saying to him, that's a shit name, you've got to change it. And eventually he decides on Black Adam. Problem is, I think Teth Adam is a much cooler name than Black Adam.
Sorry, did you say Noah Centineo was great?
He was. You know, he's not given much to do. And the very little that he has to do, he does fine.
Fair enough, mate. Fair enough.
Yeah, he's not... He is given... They say to him, do this. And the thing they told him to do, it wasn't much, and he did it. What more can you ask?
Yeah, I'm not gonna lie.
He was never going to win an Oscar for this performance. He was never going to blow people's minds with this performance. Nobody expected that. Nobody
Imagine if he did win an Oscar.
He just did what he needed to do. Black Adam for Best Picture and Noah Centineo for Best Supporting Actor.
No, I think the fact that they were, like, Best Picture, no. Like, no, not get nominated anywhere else, but just Centineo for Supporting Actor.
Yeah, I actually... Oh, as well, the one thing I will say about this film, quickly, to wrap it up, is... one thing I hate about making films about villains is that naturally, when you center them in the story, they become the protagonist and they become the hero, even if they're a villain. And Black Adam is the hero in this film. As much as he does some bad stuff, he is the hero in this film. The Justice Society are very misguided and very bad. They're not good people, and they explore that very well. But I don't like the fact that he's a villain. If you put him in a Shazam film, and then let him be the evil villain that he should be, rather than putting him in his own film and making him out to be the villain. But actually, he's very clearly the hero.
Yeah, but the thing is, now they can Civil War, Batman vs Superman this, and when he faces off against Shazam, inevitably, because he's a Shazam bad guy, you will be able to have, like, different people will side with different ones, and it'll become like an interactive experience. Godzilla Kong, who do you want to win? You understand both people's motivations. And I think that will make it probably a better film. So I think it makes sense to have this.
I guess you're right.
I thought Black Adam looked, the trailer didn't look great. The trailer looked, I think the trailer looked all right. I think that I was quite intrigued by it, but then everyone said it was shit, and I kind of got a bit bummed out, and the whole, like, Rock making it into a meme, like you said, and I was like, okay, I'm fairly certain Black Adam's crap. But now you said that, I feel a lot more positive about it, and I probably will try harder to make sure I can see it in new cinemas. Yeah, I mean, ultimately, like, I think the Justice Society of America looks like an interesting kind of group of superheroes. Like, it's an interesting little ensemble. I'd like to watch them, so.
Yeah. And they are fun. Pierce Brosnan is genuinely great in this film. He really is. You know, I've been saying everyone else is just kind of doing their thing. Pierce Brosnan is great in this film. His character is really, really cool, and I love him. But yeah, like I say, the one thing I want in a film is clear, like, passion and care put into it. If it ends up being bad, it ends up being bad. At least you tried. I'd rather you try and fail than not try. And they tried. They really tried. They put a lot of effort and passion into this. And I really respect that.
Okay, nice. Okay, I'm surprised. To be honest, I expected you to give this a scathing review.
No, not at all. I wasn't in a good mood when I watched it, and I'm in a good mood now.
That makes me sad.
Maybe that's influential.
I like when you're sad. I like when you're upset. For sure, it makes my day better.
Well, I'm sure we'll have I'm sure I'll find the film horrible to review soon. But I've had a very good month. I've seen some very excellent films this month. I've not seen a bad film this month. In fact, I saw a bad film at the beginning of the month. But since then, I've had a run of consistently good films.
I've been fairly good this month. Smile, obviously the notable failure. And also, I did not like one of the films at the Horror Marathon, but I'm not going to say which one. You have to listen to the next time I do this episode, if I do, whenever.
Ooh.
I don't know whether it'll be in the Doctor
Who episode, teaser,
or whether it'll be in a Halloween special, if I can do that in time, or it'll be when we review Halloween Ends in a week's time, or whatever. But when I talk about the next episode, or whatever, I'll talk about my Horror Marathon, and you'll find out which film I actually did not like. Okay, what are you rating Black Adam?
I would give Black Adam a 5 out of 10.
Fucking hell, that is the most positive 5 out of 10 I've ever heard.
I know, it doesn't make any sense, but it makes sense to me. 5
out of 10? You gave that a more positive review than you did for films that you've given 7s.
Like I said, it tried and it did ultimately fail, so I can't give it a high review. But I still respect it, and it was still fun. I'm going to give it a 6, actually.
I bullied you to give it a 6.
You did. You bullied me into changing it from a 5 to
okay.
a 6.
Okay. Who's your man of the match? Please say it's The Rock.
I really wish it was The Rock, but it's not. It's not. It's Pierce Brosnan. It's Pierce Brosnan for playing Dr. Fate, who is very cool in this film.
Nice. Okay. Nice. I can only respect it. It feels weird not reviewing the last film of the episode. I think it's probably the first time I've ever not reviewed the last film of the episode.
That is peculiar. I feel kind that is of bizarre. Useless,
even
it's
more
a
so
big step.
Okay, I guess we should just wrap up then.
I think so. I don't have anything else to say.
Okay. Well, that was our reviews of Black Adam, Smile, and The Woman King. What is going to be the next episode, Lewis? We aren't sure ourselves. We do know that we have a Doctor Who episode coming out in the next 2 weeks for certain. We do know that we plan to do an episode on Halloween Ends, but that one is less of a promise, so we're not 100% sure. The aim is to be able to get our Halloween episode out, but it depends on time. But we will guarantee that we are going to be doing an episode reviewing the first four series of the revival of Doctor Who. That will guaranteed be coming soon. We have got that planned. So, yeah. So, whether we see you in a spooky Halloween episode, or I see you in a spooky Halloween episode, or whether we see you in a Doctor Who themed episode in a few weeks, we appreciate everyone for listening. So, if you have any parting things to say to our audience, I will start giving the outro. So, thank you very much, everyone listening. You can find us on Twitter at NowShownPod, and you can find us both co-hosts at SamHMedia and LewisJWR. You can find us on Letterboxd, respectively, at Sam Houston and LJWR. You can contact the podcast directly at NowShownPod@gmail.com. If you want us help us, if you like the podcast and you want to help us out, the best way to do so is by telling your friends about the podcast. But a slightly easier thing you can do is by giving us a 5-star rating on iTunes or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Amazon Podcasts. We don't care. As long as you give us a 5-star, you're in our good books for sure. Yes. Thank you very much, everyone, for making this our last episode, one of our most successful ever. We appreciate the increase in viewership, and yeah, we very much value every single one of you who decides to listen to our stupid shite. Until next time.
That's true. Thank you.
Keep smiling. And that was kind of a smile thing, but it didn't really work. So I'm going to kind of pretend I didn't say that.
No, it didn't.
And yeah, we...
keep smiling.
Keep smiling. And... yeah, we hope the... I kind of think of some sort of hierarchy theme joke. A hierarchy of power in the podcast hasn't changed. I'm still king. A male king. The man king, perhaps.
You're still the man king.
The hierarchy hasn't changed. And you, in comparison, are... I don't know, an atom? That's kind of Black Adam-y, maybe.
I'm Black Adam.
You're Black Adam, for sure. No, no, you're not. I'm the white Noah Centineo.
I am the Rock. I am the Rock of the Now Show
really?
Podcast.
I'm the white Pierce Brosnan.
Yeah, I'm Dwayne the Rock Johnson.
Okay. See you next time, guys. Goodbye. We're rambling. Goodbye. Bye-bye.
Goodbye. Bye. Thank you. And please start behaving yourselves in the cinema.